Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. Yes, this is the same voice you heard in the music there. Only now you've got to make your own music. I'm in the background or something because I'm not going to turn the music on again. Welcome to the show on this June the 26th. Already June the 27th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. There are so many people that I want to say hello to tonight, and I can't remember everyone's name. I've been getting lots of really great email from readers at my website, people who have been following my articles in the Idaho Observer. I appreciate your warm and uplifting comments in these difficult times, as well as all the encouragement I've been giving, been given by people, and the many thanks that I've been given for pointing out some things with a different perspective than what we hear in the mainstream media. I really, truly appreciate all the comments. I want to give a special shout-out to a friend in Missouri, and Linda, you know who you are. I hope you're listening, as well as Karen in Columbus, And just people all over the universe. In fact, I want to say a special hello to Karen, Bob, and Bill, David, Crenshaw, Zachariah, Sheila, Sylvia, and last but not least, Jill. And I'll throw in one for the general there. You folks be safe, and I hope you enjoy the show. Now, what is going on in the world? Well, you know, last weekend we had a very hot show with my guest, really over the whole weekend. There was a lot of tension going on around this planet, and many, many people felt that. Many people would talk to me either on the air during the shows during the week or privately on the telephone, exchanging comments in email, and even people I saw on the street. Believe it or not, people felt some kind of unusual tension, and they knew something was happening or something was about to happen. I got a report today, and this is substantiated with a very long email that is actually can be seen at stevequayle.com, composed by The Hawk, or he calls himself. He handles the Q Factor, I think, on Thursdays. He's the host of that show. And they had quite a large number of phone calls into the show from ham radio operators around the world who were picking up military chatter involving a launching of an ICBM, a nuclear missile, an intercontinental ballistic missile. They tend to be nuclear in nature. Now, what was interesting about this story is that the Russian Navy supposedly had submarines on both coasts of the United States, both the Pacific and the Atlantic coast, as well as the Gulf Coast, and these are nuclear subs, and there was a confrontation occurring, and our side, the United States, launched from an area determined to be in North Dakota, launched an ICBM, and after it was making its way to the west, presumably toward Russia, out of nowhere, a triangular craft appeared. Many people have reported seeing these crafts. It was cloaked, and it just appeared and shot the missile out of the air or out of the sky. I don't know I don't have the details as to what altitude this missile had achieved by the time it was shot, but it was totally obliterated, as if to say, this is what we can do. We can shoot a missile at you, and we can also take missiles out of the sky. Now, to go a bit further, there was another triangular craft that was shot down over Norway, and there were some activities seen around Nova Scotia. A craft was seen to sort of hightail itself into the direction from Nova Scotia toward North Dakota to shoot this craft at a very, very high rate of speed. And so we have these anomalies occurring. Not a lick of this international event was reported by the mainstream media. And to my knowledge, this is the only other show that has talked about this on the air other than the Q Factor a week ago on the 20th of June. This did occur. There is substantiation all over the place. Now, what is the significance of this event? Well, it so happens that on the 20th, there was a deadline for the Wantagate payments, the 167 or so countries waiting for the Tier 1 payments. These are billions of dollars going out of our treasury into the hands of foreign countries that facilitated the movement of Russian rubles, supposedly during the 1980s and the early 90s until Wanta was incarcerated. Wanta himself, it is reported by Christopher Story, has been paid probably $4.5 trillion, $1.575 trillion, which will go to the U.S. Treasury in taxes. Interesting, in respect to this outer space event, or it's not totally outer space, but in that character, we'll say, this missile launching and then the firing from a triangular craft resembling those that people see as UFOs often, although they're attributed to crash dummies, weather balloons, and swamp gas normally. I guess the swamp gas is capable now of taking out ICBMs. The significance of this is that George Bush had been caught red-handed. We're talking about Junior, the president, had been caught red-handed having opened up several bank accounts in Ireland with the Prime Minister of England, Gordon Brown, who he had just met shortly before in a red carpet ceremony in London when Bush's plane arrived in Ireland. Brown was on the tarmac waiting for him to go off, and it was suspected that they opened up some bank accounts. It was found out to be the case after Christopher Story reported this. And so they were going to end up stealing money from the Queen of England, even after he had sworn to keep his agreement on our behalf. And now Gordon Brown is going to be resigning. At least he's not going to head the Labour Party anymore in England. And he's probably going to duck out of politics. But he's been caught red-handed, as was George W. Bush. You have not heard a lick of this in the mainstream media. This is not fiction, and it coincides with this event because Russia was due a lot of money, and so were many other countries, and they were tired of being lied to. Now, this provocation and this look what we can do thing is not the kind of thing that this country or the rest of the world needs, and it's about time that this insanity stops. Enough said about that. As more facts come out, I will share that with my listening audience. You can trust that this is the first time you have heard this outside of the Q Factor on stevequayle.com. And I'd like to see how the mainstream media tries to spin this one. With that, we have a very uplifting show again tonight, and I'm bringing back a very special guest. She is an author. She's written The Call, Awakening the Angelic Human. Her website, sacredspaceswa.com, and another site, angelichuman.com, are two popular sites for those that want to awaken to their higher self. And we're going to talk about Lord knows what tonight, but I'd like to welcome back to Evident Footprints our special guest this evening, Tony Elizabeth Sarah Petrinovich. Tony.
Thank you very much, Don. Lovely introduction.
Thank you.
That's interesting news. I hadn't heard that either, and I do keep my little eyes open for what's going on. So we'll see what happens there.
Yes, this was seen over Bozeman, Montana, actually. That's where they saw the missile actually sort of zooming over. And evidently thousands of people saw this. They were calling into the show and monitoring it on ham radios.
Well, is the consensus that these ships, planes, whatever you want to call them, that appeared were from Earth or not from Earth?
This was ours. Now, where the technology...
Okay.
Yeah. The technology very well could have come from off-planet.
Okay, I wasn't sure when you said that it was cloaked and it appeared and disappeared, whether the connotation was that it was not from here.
Yeah, they have cloaking techniques. In fact, they know how to cloak people, too.
Yeah.
And I don't, I'm not just speaking about coats and
no. coats
trench
coats.
And
no.
yeah.
Right, exactly. Hmm, well, okay then.
You know, Jesus said, if they steal your cloak, give them your coat, too.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and sometimes that's exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but this isn't a scare tactic. This is real news, so.
Yeah, no, I understand, you know, what you're saying. And there's several different alternative internet news sites that I just keep my eye on that bring the same type of news to us that you don't see ever on any of the news agencies that are on television or on the internet or in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not fictional, and it's not made up, and it's not somebody trying to say it sensationalize something. It's just simply giving you facts that the other news didn't, you know, they just left them out on purpose. So then you get a different picture completely of what's going on. So that'll be interesting to see.
It's all illusion anyway. It's all smoke and mirrors, and we know that.
It is all smoke and mirrors. And the thing that's really fun is that it really is all illusion. I just finished, I'm actually finishing up tomorrow morning, but for all intents and purposes, I'm finished a retreat that I facilitated this week on Lopez Island. And that's what we were talking about, was what is the illusion and how do you live in it? How do you maintain your balance in a world that's moving as fast as our world is, with a mass consciousness that is as chaotic as ours is? And that was the whole thrust of the retreat, and it turned out really well. And I'm very pleased with it. And it's all about the heart. That's the only place that you really biologically can go to create balance within your body, because the heart is the largest electromagnetic organ in our body, and it actually entrains the whole body. So if we're trying to stay out of stress or really stay balanced so that we can make decisions, our cortex can actually operate around all of these themes that you write about and talk about so much, we need to stay in a coherent frame of mind so that we can really see. And then you can see when the illusion, even though it's all illusion, you can see when the illusion is becoming polluted with lack of information or information that isn't true.
Yeah, disinformation it's usually called.
Yes, disinformation, that's exactly what it's called.
Well, yeah, I guess you see the dichotomy in bringing or, you know, arriving at the truth, let's say, however that's accomplished, that you have to look at the illusion to recognize that it is an illusion,
mm-hmm.
that it's a fallacy in order to rise above it.
Right, and we all live in a world that is relative for each of us. You know, you and I are talking about the same subject, and yet it means one thing to you and it means something else to me. And it's neither right or wrong or bad or good what it means to each of us, but it's relative to where our own perception is, our own frame of reference. And within that relativity, that's where there's so many, we were talking mostly in this retreat about interpersonal relationships. We did talk a lot about, you know, just living life from the standpoint of out in the business world, etc. But we were talking more about one-on-one. So that with people that you are really close to or want to be close to, or family, friends, peer group, boss relationships, those people that you see every day, how do you maintain this sense of balance within your own relativity without getting into a lot of altercations or finger pointing or blaming or feeling like you're being put upon or whatever people, you know, come up with for specific victimhood terms. And that's when I, you know, go back to the heart again. And in that ability to step back and realize that no matter who you're talking about or what situation you're talking about, the people within it are actually doing the best they can. Now, it may not look like that. It may look really awful to you or anybody else, And at the same time, the people who are performing whatever you're looking at are doing the best they can as the beings that they are. And when we can step back into that perspective in our own relativity, it gives us a chance to reassess where we want to be in relationship to whatever it is we feel we're observing. And it can be something on TV, it can be the news, it can be a situation that somebody else is discussing, or it can be an actual interpersonal relationship with you and another person where you feel like the two of you are never going to meet in the middle because you're just too far apart.
And do you agree? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, it's just stepping back from your feeling that you and they have to be in agreement and you have to see things the same way by realizing you're never going to see things the same way with anybody, because everybody has a relative viewpoint on everything depending upon who they are, how they were raised, what their belief system is, what country they live in, what they had for dinner. It changes everything. So what were you going to ask me?
I thought you had concluded your statement, but I'm glad I allowed you to continue that. It's still what I was going to say. It is appropriate. I'm stepping outside the box for a moment here, and I'm asking you for your thought on the concept that argument that I'm having with that person, or, you know, that these two people are having, is really the same person. That person is having that argument with themselves. Is that a stretch into the absurd, or is that true?
So let me make sure that I understand your question. That if you're having an argument with a person, you're really having the argument with yourself? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Ultimately, I'm arguing with myself.
Because
we are all
one. Are. Right.
Yes.
We're all one. Yes. And it's more than one answer to your question. Yes. We're all one. And so, therefore, you are arguing with yourself because you're arguing with another aspect of yourself. And from a psychological standpoint, you're also arguing with yourself. Because people get into arguments when they have a point to prove, but they're really proving it to themselves. If somebody really knows something, if they're sure that this is what they know, now it might not be my truth and it might not be your truth, but it's somebody's truth. And if you really feel that it's your truth, you don't have any need to argue about it. You're simply there with your truth, unless it happens to change, or you decide you're not going to believe that anymore, or think it's your truth, or whatever. There isn't that insistent need to prove that you're right.
Yes.
So in that, there's no need for argument.
Now, can we disagree, or can we agree to disagree on something you said?
You and I?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
If you and I are having that argument, it's your fault. You're arguing with yourself. It's not me. I'm just kidding. I just thought I would go further outside the box.
Okay.
And put the blame on you.
Okay. I'll take the blame this time. Next time it'll be your turn. Because we're all one, so we could just have a good time sharing it.
No, I did that on purpose for the listeners so they can see how that sounds, you know, because that sounds very egotistical, doesn't it? We revert back to our old way. Because simultaneously, as that's me arguing with me, it's you arguing with you.
Yes, that's true. That is absolutely true. And I think and that's one of the reasons that I really enjoy these retreats, because we have enough time together that inevitably something like that comes up. I mean, people staying together day after day after day, eventually things come up. And people get to see themselves doing it in a frame of reference that is set up to examine this type of thing, versus trying to catch it in the heat of the moment when you're experiencing a situation where you really think that you need to, you know, argue your point, and you feel if you lose, you know, the whole world's going to end. So that's harder for you to step back in those times until you practice it and you get used to seeing, oh, here, I'm just about to do that again. I don't want to do this again. And change your habit of reacting and make it a response instead, based on simply knowing that how you feel is your truth, and the other person just simply has a different truth. So it's very rewarding to watch people grow in that kind of a circumstance, and it's something that very few people afford themselves the chance to do, to take time out from life to examine really where they are and where they're coming from and what's happening for them without being caught up in that day-to-day, you know, hamster cage existence that most people in the mass consciousness are living in.
I usually see myself on the exercise wheel more than just in the cage.
I didn't hear everything. You cut out. You usually see yourself how?
I usually see myself on the exercise wheel as opposed to just in the cage.
we'll take the hamster wheel out of the cage for you, so you don't have to be caged up.
Well, I know we didn't plan anything specific tonight, Tony, to talk about, although, you know, this is quite appropriate. I wanted to run something by you, and this has to do with the impact of the unseen on what our experiences are, whether they're illusory or not. And let's assume that, for the most part, they are, as long as we're in these physical bodies and we're seeing things. You know, with the five senses and with the limitations of our consciousness and our to what degree we're in the belief system, to what degree we're controlled by this matrix. How do I say this? Okay, I'm going to be very brief here and share with you that in viewing some photographs of 9/11 at the World Trade Center area and at the Pentagon. In hindsight, and studying these photographs, I noticed many metaphysical manifestations that occurred, and it lends itself to what type of destruction occurred, what caused the destruction, specifically from a scientific point of view. Now, I'll stop there and tell you that I was recently shown a photograph by Ken Adachi, who has a great website for research, educateyourself.org. And he's been a guest on my show quite a bit. In fact, he was on a couple of nights ago. And Ken was sent this photo of two UFOs in Germany in the sky at night. And these craft are reddish glowing, and the sky was pitch black. In fact, you can't see any stars or anything in the sky. It's kind of an eerie photo. And the photo he got was blown up a little bit, and it was still not at the resolution where you could really make out the detail. Ken is pretty good with Photoshop, and he was changing the size of the photo and doing some inversions and filtering techniques to try to enhance the image and clarify it. And what we had noticed was that we could see that there was a, without going into too much detail about this, because he's going to write a story about this, but there we could determine what the power system was of these craft, and I was able to identify the craft as to who they belong, and I can tell you they weren't from here. Okay. Now, what was interesting is as we were doing these auto level adjustments and slate filtering adjustments, my attention was drawn to what is normally the black of night, the black sky. And what appeared were all kinds of entities, just like the ones in the smoke anomalies and the dust anomalies of all this destruction on 9/11. I immediately understood that whatever the power source of these craft was the same method used to bring down those buildings. And I hope you will soon see these pictures. When we publish these photos, it's mind-blowing to see that there is this much activity in what we consider to be negative space. Now, my question is the issue of when science opens up the time-space continuum, they tear it open, and it's probably irreparable, at least from within our knowledge of how things work and how they were created. Every time we try to fix it, we damage it further. And this is caused by nuclear explosions and directed energy weapons, these weapons that are secret weapons that have enormous potential, the types of weapons that shot this missile out. This is kind of interesting that all of this is occurring simultaneously because we're coming to a collective understanding of what these forces are. Now, from the perspective of the angelic human, how does one deal with these entities that seem to be coming into this reality, Lord knows, by the millions, maybe millions a minute? This is a difficult question too, I imagine.
Well, in my relative world, those entities aren't coming here. They already were here.
Okay.
And we are now coming to a time when we can see them or take pictures of them or have the visual capability. Like, I can see the light orbs. That doesn't mean everybody else can see them. I can see them. I'm not going to say they're not there because they're there for me. So different people can see different things, and there are also the ability of the technical equipment we have to photograph some of these entities, some of these beings, etc., because as we take a picture, especially with the flash, and this is one of the reasons that people say, well, it's not real because the flash is doing it. Well, no, the flash isn't doing it. What the flash is doing is exciting the photons that are within the entity slash being, whatever we're going to call them, so that as the photons excite and it raises the vibration, the frequency of that being, and it raises it up, and as it comes back down to normal frequency, those photons are released, and that's when we see it. So they were there. It's just that we haven't had a way to access seeing them, short of the people who could see them anyway. So that and when you're saying, what are we supposed to do with them? Well, there's not a lot to do with them. They've always been here. And some people are affected by them and some people aren't. Now, are you talking about beings who are like conscious beings? Or are you talking about energy that is bringing something like the towers down? Or are you saying that they're both the same thing?
No, I'm saying that the two events sort of, or one event facilitates the other. Let's say.
Okay, so they facilitate the energy that creates the destruction.
No, the energy is preceding the appearance of these entities. In other words, it's the tear in the time-space continuum that opens the portal.
Portal that they come through.
That they come through.
Okay.
Now, this, I had the feeling that looking at these images, that it's sort of like the dolphins following the ship in the sea, that they're being displaced by the means through which these craft are flying. You can see patterns, and there's no doubt that what we're seeing is in a spiritual context something, you know, it's a dichotomy of what is good. I'll say that.
Okay. Well, like attracts like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to attract anything. If you feel, and I personally, this is where I come from, that there is a realm of possibility that we exist in. And within that realm of possibility, everything exists. Every possible permutation of everything has a possible chance of being there. So if you're, not you personally, but if someone is creating an energetic system that is ripping time and space, because those are dimensions, and they're part of the illusion, and so we can, just like you tear a fabric, we can tear it. And in doing so, we create a vibration that is incoherent, that is chaotic, that is sending out a message of here in this part of the all that is incoherencies, and things that are incoherent are going to be drawn to it. And by incoherent, I mean out of the coherent frequency of the peace, tranquility, well-being that everybody says that they want, supposedly. So I think that what you're saying is valid, that whatever is creating the explosion, whatever rips the time-space continuum, and unless it was done in a way that was an invitation, there's different ways to do things, but obviously an explosion of buildings is not an invitation, it's just destruction. So as that's happening, it's creating the vibration within it that says, right here lives something that you, who are chaotic, are going to feel resonance with, and it will draw them there. So yes, they would appear there.
Yes, I understand that principle. Now, what was alarming to me, in a sense, didn't scare me, but it was just, I mean, it was mind-blowing in a sense, because I immediately recognized what was there.
Mm-hmm.
when I got it to a proper enlargement to where these things manifested their image in some congruous fashion. In other words, in a recognizable fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You see a face, you see eyes, you see a nose, mouth, lips, ears.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were wearing helmets. Some are mm-hmm. animals. And I know that in the metaphysical realms that certain frequencies will draw those types of beings. And
mm-hmm.
and so we are subject to these.
What do you mean we're subject? What does subject mean?
Well, I'm saying in a sense now, let me explain myself so I don't sound like I'm superstitious or something. What I'm saying is they're in our energy field to some extent,
mm-hmm.
or they've been let into this dimension, and so they have some impact, maybe on a subconscious level. Maybe they participate in the group game of war, or maybe they're attracted to death and destruction or something. You know, obviously
mm-hmm.
these are dark entities, but that this was so prevalent in the dark sky, the night sky. This is what was mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
So many. And now whether they're just following these ship, these craft, just like, and these were saucer-like craft, just like the dolphins or the porpoises follow a sailboat out at sea or an ocean liner.
Mm-hmm.
This was not as organized, and it wasn't anything beautiful to look at. I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what dawned on me is that, okay, if this is there and there's a way for us to see this at night, certainly these things are there during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over the place, that
mm-hmm.
not just where these craft were.
Right.
But wherever these craft may be, wherever these craft have gone, wherever these tears in the time-space, the fabric of the time-space continuum may be on the planet, they have a portal to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it just a simple matter of holding one's intention above that, without sounding religious per se, but
no,
looking at it?
I agree with you, and we don't have to go religious. We can go scientific. We can go whatever anybody wants to go. What it really boils down to is they are in their frequency. Frequency means how fast the wavelength vibrates, okay, the oscillation.
Cycles per second.
Cycles per second, yes, exactly. Okay, in that frequency, they are incoherent, which means that the troughs and the crests of their wavelength are uneven, and they are very uneven. They're spiked, they're high, they're low, they're close together, they're far apart. This is called incoherency. Incoherency does not support life. It is destructive. When we are coherent, which means we keep ourselves heart-centered, and when heart-centered, I don't mean lovey-dovey, all this romantic foo-foo stuff. I'm talking about paying attention to what you feel in the center of your body and holding a state of appreciation for life, for your own life, for what is in your life. And you hold that state constantly and stay coherent as much to the best of your ability. They cannot impact you. A coherent wave and an incoherent wave will bounce off of each other. They will not combine. They cannot impact you. They can be right in front of you, and they cannot impact you.
And that's what the orbs meant when they said they would like us to be a bit more round.
Exactly. Exactly. And
okay.
in so to speak. Okay.
When I made the joke about the couch potatoes helping along with that.
Exactly. Well, the couch potatoes, to a certain extent, it depends upon what they're watching on television and how what riot that's inciting in the mind.
Yeah.
But when they're talking about being round, is like, you know, I first say it's kind of like your Teflon. Things just slide off of them. Well, a coherent wavelength does the same thing. The only thing it will bond with, the only thing it will come into union with, is another coherent wavelength. It will not come into union. It will not combine with incoherency. It cannot.
Mm-hmm.
Scientifically. So when you're around that kind of energy, what you want to do, A, is not be afraid, not resist, don't fight it, but rather go into the state of appreciation within your body for life, for yourself. Whatever you need to conjure up. I said this to a woman once, and I was telling her about this, and she said, chocolate cake? I said, chocolate cake? She said, if I think of chocolate cake, my body will be filled with so much appreciation. And she was dead serious. I can go to chocolate cake any time and feel absolute bliss. And I said, well, then chocolate cake is it for you. But it's whatever brings us to that state where we know, and it's different for each person, where we know we feel the best we can possibly feel right now. And that brings coherency into the body. And this is all proven. This is all scientific. It is not some metaphysical idea that somebody conjured up from the Pleiades. There are institutes all over the world working with these tools and these theories, and it works. They're keeping people from having heart attacks, high blood pressure, strokes, you name it, teaching people how to go into these states of appreciation and stay there.
Now, you understand I asked that question for the benefit of the listening audience.
Oh, yes, I understand that.
And I'm in agreement with you. What you're describing is the fundamental principle behind music, what makes people like music and makes them feel good or makes them want to dance or mm-hmm. or celebrate or, can even change their mood, to something appropriate for whatever the situation is. I mean,
it creates harmony.
That's why they don't play Happy Days or Here Again at most funerals,
mm-hmm.
They like to play it at the political conventions, to give us that happy, good feeling that things are going to change, even though they're just taking it the next step in the direction that they plan. So music serves a purpose, but, ultimately it serves a very high purpose. And, I get the feeling looking at these images and what you said is also borne out by the fact that these things are so close together and there's so many of them, they're actually manifesting themselves out of the same pool of energy,
mm-hmm.
for a lack of a better description.
Mm-hmm.
It would be as if everyone in the swimming pool was on everyone else's shoulders and
okay.
just they, popping out to take a picture, It was a very, very strange scenario to see manifest itself just by changing the lighting perspective of the sky at night. It was amazing that this was there.
So these pictures are not anywhere where anybody can see them. He's going to publish them in a book. Is that what you're saying?
No, he's going to be publishing them to his website. And my understanding with him is that we will both probably spend a little more time considering some of the pictures and some of the shots in there, although Ken knows how to see these. He could see them. In the beginning, when I showed him the ones in the World Trade Center photos, he wasn't seeing them as well as I in the beginning, but after a few minutes, he saw them all. He could see everything, you see.
Yeah, I understand.
This is an acquired skill. You teach your, I think it's teaching your eyes and your mind to agree as to what you're seeing.
Yes, you have to give your mind permission to see it.
Yes, or vice versa,
Or your mind gives you permission to see it. Yeah, vice versa. Either way, you have to come into agreement that you're going to allow yourself to see, because so many things we don't. And people, people listening know what that's like when you're looking for your keys and they're right there on the table, but you're so frantic looking for them that you can't find them.
How many times have they been in your hand?
Exactly. We have to give ourselves permission to actually see, and that's what you're talking about. And that happens with pictures frequently. That's quite an astounding finding that you have come up with. I'm looking forward to knowing when they're available to take a look at them.
Yes. Now, the point I'm making here, too, is that we, if we are to rise in consciousness, we are to understand the all or the whole of everything that's at work here, whether we perceive it right now as good or bad or whatever. It is definitely a dichotomy, and it's a manifestation in line or according to the laws at work there in relation to the type of energy system that is in force. And I'm not going to speak about that. I want to give Ken the opportunity to write this piece. and we will come right out and say what this is. But I ran this by Dr. Judy Wood today, and she was very interested in this because it, in a sense, it aligns with her findings there, and she has been highly criticized because she's not taking the conventional approach. And she's got a she's degreed in engineering, mechanics, mechanical engineering, so she can argue every phase of what happened on 9/11 and explain how things happen and how they would have been able to happen like they did by certain types of energy methods or systems at work. And we're in agreement.
Does she have a website?
Yes, it's drjudywood.com, I believe.
Well, that's easy.
Very interesting lectures on, and very detailed lectures on all of the phenomenon that occurred. I can tell you that she'll be on my show this coming month at least two times. And we're going to be discussing these things because there is something that was missing that we found in correlating these photos, these images, which are in both types of photos. Neither of which I took. I'm just analyzing them.
But
I'm using, you know, my sixth sense to perceive what's going on in all of this, because there seems to be a kind of order to it, even though it's chaotic, if you know what I mean.
Well, it certainly makes a lot of sense for what I sensed and what I experienced during that time around all of that. It fills in a lot of the blanks.
Yes.
And it also made me just muse about, as you were talking, I went, PEAR, it's an institute that came out of Princeton, works with random number generators. They've got these little random number generators, they call them eggs, around the Earth. And they send information back to these computers that are generating random numbers. And when something happens on the planet, that there is a consensus of attention within the mass consciousness in the noosphere, the random number generators begin running in sequence. They lose their randomness, and they begin running in sequence when enough consciousness on the planet is focused on one thing. It happened with the O.J. Simpson trial. It happened with Diana's death. It happened at 9/11, but the thing that was different about 9/11 is 9/11 basically, for all intents and purposes, from the viewer's standpoint, started at like about 8:45. These random number generators started going in sequence at 6 a.m. And a lot of people have said, well, you know, to me, what's that about? And I said, well, there's a lot of maybes about it. It could be that the mass consciousness knew something was coming, because there really is no time, and it was a great enough impact that it caused that. It could be that the beings who created 9/11 for us all to experience had such an intense energy stream among themselves that it did it. I don't have a complete answer for you, but I do know that whatever it was outside of linear time.
I'd say it was all of the above.
It could be all of the above, absolutely. So now you're telling me that you saw some other energy there, and I'm thinking, okay, so how did the other energy impact the random number generators? By the, by itself or through us, I don't know. I don't know the answers. I'm just, it just put in another piece within this puzzle that says, huh, so now there's more there that, that could affect anything. And I just find that really interesting, so I want to follow up on this and see. Because I was abnormally attentive to 9/11. I am not a person who follows these kinds of things like a rabid dog.
And neither am I, but this is something that's sort of jumped into my space, if you know what I mean.
Well, the thing is that I did. I literally closed down my practice, turned on as many alternative news sources as I could, and just gathered all the data I possibly could and started seeing all these holes in what was being presented. And that's very, very, very unusual for me. I mean, I just sat back and go, what are you doing? And I did it for like a week. And I didn't do anything else, nothing. And I'm just putting that into my own, what you've been talking about, into my own little 9/11 mental file cabinet and going, this is interesting. You know, what made me stop and say, I really need to pay attention to this? And I have my own conclusions, and I'm sure everybody has their own conclusions. But this is a different piece.
Yes, it is.
And it's definitely a possible piece.
Yes, and it's an overwhelming feeling that we're onto something here, and we can't change what happened. But what's interesting is even the random generators, the random number generators, are reacting to the illusion, aren't they?
Oh yeah, definitely. They're part of it. Yeah, we're all the oneness is complete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think that, you know, they talk about the oneness like it's like a fairy tale or it's some great spiritual uplifting experience. It's real. Everything is of the same material, the same electromagnetic manifestation of life. No matter how we see it, no matter what the frequency is, it's all of the same stuff. So in that, we are all connected. We can't disconnect from it.
Mm-hmm.
We can
now, there was
the
a numerical significance to this event that I described at the top of the show, this exchange of money on the 20th.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
620 is an 8. We'll leave out the 2008 for the moment. Just the 620 is an 8, which is 8 is the number of wealth or abundance.
Okay.
And it's a structural number. And there you had this activity surrounding that date, as though that date was chosen as the most precipitous number, at least in that week, to produce the money. But the money was being withheld, which was what caused all that chaos, you see, because you've got these dark entities orchestrating all this stuff. So it's going to be chaotic. It's not going to be honorable, and there's going to be this power play, even for the energy, for one energy to have power over the other.
Yes, it's always so, that way. The top dog.
Yes, and it underscores that saying: "There's no honor among thieves."
That's very true. No, absolutely. Don't want to turn your back there.
You know, and in all of these situations, this is all about power and control. Everything, whether we're talking about the World Trade Center or we're talking about the anomalies in the sky, these are things moving into a space where they normally wouldn't have access or permission, but it's things have been modified so beyond universal law that they have been given permission to move in into that dimension and wreak the havoc that they wreak because of their nature. And so, my drawing attention to this is that you could affect the healing that you did with your wise counsel on how these things really are not, they're not synchronous with us. They're not harmonic to our vibration.
No, they're not. And it's something that, you know, listeners, you can really take to the bank, and I mean that figuratively and I mean it literally, because if you want to have your life unfold around you into the future that you're creating in a way that pleases you, in a way that brings you the things that you really want in your life, whether they're material or spiritual, emotional, mental, I don't care what it is, all you have to do is to hold a vibration that encourages life to do so. And that is in the coherency of your own heart structure. And that it's really that simple, and that's part of the issue, is that it's too simple. People want to have lots of stuff attached to everything because it keeps the mind busy and it makes the mind happy to think that they've accomplished some great task, rather than realizing we're all born this way and we get it conditioned and programmed out of us, and we can remember and reacquire the ability to do that, and then there isn't anything to be afraid of. I literally disarmed an armed gunman on the street in San Francisco with this technique. Everybody else was running around screaming. I simply dropped into my heart, stayed there, knew I was there, and walked up to him with my hand outstretched and said, please give me your gun. And he did. And it was really that simple. It'll do anything because it's life seeking life. In my... Go ahead. In my reality, this man I'm approaching is not a gunman who's going to kill me. He is someone who is outside of his own life stream, and he is seeking that life. He cannot not seek that life. Every cell in his body is looking for life. Every cell in his body wants to vibrate in coherency. If I bring that into his field, then it will respond to me. Mm-hmm. And I know that.
Now, in your hindsight, what aspect of him was out of sync? What was that little piece that was missing?
He was angry. He was mad. His wife was mad at him. He was mad at his wife. It turned out he was having a fight with his wife, and they had been drinking. And she was hanging out of the window up above us. You know, in San Francisco, everything's in the high-rise apartments. And she was yelling at him to come back up there and finish the argument. Well, he had just grabbed a gun, and he's down on the streets throwing garbage everywhere and wielding this gun, just aiming it at everybody. And I don't know that, because it didn't turn out that way, I don't know who he would have shot. But he was out of control enough that he could have shot a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the anger, and of course compounded by alcohol, but even if we put that aside, the anger itself creates this incoherency. And when we're incoherent, it's called cortical inhibition. The cortex cannot function. We can't think. That's why people will say, I can't believe I did that. I just saw red and I just reacted. And I would never do that, but I did it. Because they're not thinking. They can't think. All they do is act.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I ask you, once you got the gun out of his hand, did you force him to pick up the garbage he had thrown around? Or
no? No, I didn't. I left the garbage there, but I did pull the clip out of the gun. And we had a talk. He did calm down, and he wasn't so drunk that he couldn't talk. And we did talk about what was going on, and he was very apologetic that he had scared everybody and blah, 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 blah. And so I finally said, well, I think you should go back upstairs and, you know, straighten this out with your wife. It sounds like she wants to, you know, figure out what's going on here. I think things are out of a little out of control. Gave him his gun back without the clip and sent him back home. And that was that. It was done.
I'm concerned about the garbage. Who picked up that garbage?
Well, probably the people in front of whose stores it was, because you know, in San Francisco, they have stores on the ground floor, and they have buildings up ahead, up top, or apartments up top. It was one of those arrangements. It was downtown, and so probably the people that own the garbage. I wasn't too concerned about garbage right then. You're concerned about the garbage. I'm not concerned about the garbage.
I just like it nice and neat and tidy, you know.
Nice and neat and tidy. And meanwhile, we're all, you know, attempting to survive, and Don is picking up the garbage. Don't mind me. I just wanted us all to just go in a nice and neat place.
I'm just pointing out that there is more than one perspective, you see. We,
yeah, exactly.
We see different things, don't we?
Exactly. This is very true.
In fact, I can smell the garbage.
You can tell, yeah, really, yeah, bags of garbage, yuck. No, especially downtown in the city, not fun.
And he reached out to shake your hand, and you said, ooh, no, go wash your hands.
No, he didn't shake my hand. No, we didn't go quite that far. Sorry.
Oh, we could have fun with that.
Yes, we could. Let's just stop that one right there. Well, as my daughter would say, TMI, TMI.
Yes, that's true. Now, you know, I had an experience, I think I shared this with you, where I talked a friend out of committing suicide, and then I began having visions.
No, you didn't tell me that.
Maybe I didn't tell you about that, but that I had visions that manifested into a 48-hour metaphysical event, a lifting of consciousness.
For you?
Over 48 hours, and
lovely.
It was quite an ordeal, though. I mean, because I couldn't sleep through this, and but once things settled, settled down, I realized I was seeing what was going to happen to me 3 years in advance, you know, and
oh, wow.
A lot of gifts came with that, too.
Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. That's terrific. How long ago was that?
That was 1982.
Oh, it's been a while. Did everything come true?
Everything came true to the T.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And you know, sometime we'll share that together. But
okay, that would be lovely.
It's a phenomenal experience all the way around. But let me just say that when one endeavors in such an act, spirit is always at work, the higher good.
Oh, absolutely. And that's just it. And knowing it 100% allows you to go forward. And that's mm-hmm. really what it's about.
And I think, you know, I think the universe used this. I had actually, in the last sentence before this began, I had used the name of Jesus and God in the same mm-hmm. sentence. Mm-hmm. And that precipitated the event.
Mm-hmm.
And that event became the turning point for my friend, where it took his mind off of all of his problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he became focused on what was happening to me. And I couldn't stop it. You know?
Oh, that's great. Good for you. Look at you. Go, Don. That's wonderful. That's perfect to get someone to come outside of themselves and place their attention on somebody else enough that they forget the acts they were going to commit themselves. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's fantastic.
Yeah, he watched for about 3 hours, and then they said, you know, I've got to go to work, so I'm going to excuse myself. He had totally forgot why he had come over. You know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, that is absolutely fantastic. Ooh, you have to write that up.
Yeah, I've been told I should do that, and it is part of my life story, you know, what precipitated later on, you know, 3 years later.
Uh-huh.
It's a heavy event. And it's brought me to a profound understanding about many, many things.
Oh, I can imagine.
And other people can relate to this because there are others that have been through something similar. And I'm not talking about this metaphysical event, but what happened afterwards.
Okay.
And I was able to help a lot of people after that happened to me, too. In other words, mm-hmm. what was foretold in the vision came to pass, and there was a lot of symbology in this too.
Okay.
The vision actually took on at times the appearance of cartoon characters.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
And there was really, really deep symbolism in it. You know, to see a noose hanging from a dogwood tree, for instance, that would imply, I mean, when you think of a dogwood, you think of biblical times, or you think of Jesus.
Okay, yeah.
And the noose hanging from that tree was empty.
Mm-hmm.
And there was symbology. There was a duck clapping its wings facing the setting sun in the photograph where these visions began appearing.
Mm-hmm.
And the setting sun in the photograph, it was a picture that I had taken in Morocco, and I had a laser print done of it. When these were in vogue, they were just coming out,
mm-hmm.
so it had a lot of detail in this photograph. Orange sky and the sun is setting off the Mediterranean coast of Morocco,
mm-hmm.
And you see the dogwood tree in the foreground and a rock, and then you see the ocean and the setting sun, and the sun actually set in the image. It continued setting. It's pretty mind-blowing to see that, and there were four other people that witnessed this with me, so...
Oh, great.
So, you know, I rubbed my eyes. That didn't help.
Yeah, you know. Right, yeah, right. Is this real? Is this real?
But someone who was to come into my life and play a role in this event appeared in the vision, and
uh-huh.
and there was symbology of animals. That I came later to understand what the whole vision meant. After the event happened, I understood the vision.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Now, in the future, when I have a vision, I know what the symbology means.
Right.
I got into the symbology.
Yeah.
should that ever happen again. But I think it's not been necessary because those revelations come in different ways now.
Right, right, yeah. Well,
and they're not as traumatic.
Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah, definitely. When you begin to accept, which you did, the way it came, then it doesn't need to make such an impression again. Then you're more aware of it. Yeah, it
yes.
works. It really works well. You know, and I know something. I've heard people say, you know, I had this huge experience, this huge spiritual experience, and I want to have more of them just like that. I say, well, you know what? I don't think it's going to happen. Because now you know what that feels like, so when it comes around again, it's not going to feel like that again. It's going to be different, because then you become more aware and more attuned to those kinds of experiences.
And well, yeah, that first experience that person might have is often what sets them on the path to an elevation in consciousness, and so they don't have to go back to that.
No, definitely. Yeah, exactly. I agree.
In fact, they have better experiences.
Right. Yeah, it's true. That's beautiful.
Well, Tony, we have come to the end of our hour. I've enjoyed this discussion with you.
Me too. Thank you.
And your perspective on all these crazy ideas that I brought forth tonight, these topics.
No, I don't think they're crazy at all.
Well, these illusory topics.
Illusory topics, yes. The illusion. The ever-present illusion. Good.
Well, would you... I always like to give you a closing comment, something uplifting for the listeners, which you are so good at. Is there anything weighing on your heart or your mind that you would like to share with people in light of some of the news that I shared at the top of the hour?
Yes. It's not exactly weighing on my heart, but at the same time, with all of the things that are happening in the world today, it's really important that we each remember that anything that we see that we don't like and we wish wasn't there can only change through our own change within ourselves. And it really means that you go to a place inside yourself where you can envision it the way you wish to see it, the way you wish it is, and act as if, or as I love to say, fake it till you make it. Act as if it is the way you wish that it would be for you, and it will be that way. And that goes for everything in your personal life, in the world, in your job, with your children, in your home, with your friends, your family. It doesn't make any difference. Simply create it with inside your own image screen, your own imagination, and hold that vision for yourself and watch it become real, because that is the way we co-create with God.
Well said. Now, while you were saying that, I booked you for two appearances in July, and I'll inform you of those dates.
Okay, all right. Okay, thank you.
I'm being a sort of a smart.
I just saluted you. You can't see it, but I'm doing it.
I heard it in your voice. Okay.
Okay, so. My dear. Have a nice evening. Nice night. Nice morning for you. It's
well,
the wee hours.
And you too, and you have a great weekend.
Thank
you. I want to thank you for your insight and for accepting two more invitations in July. You will be booked, and we'll work out the dates.
All right, dear.
I'll let you play a role in that. Try to catch Jim Murray tonight if you're not doing anything.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about some interesting things. So.
Okay, yeah, sounds like it.
You may want to catch that. Jim, these things have his goat right now. And the scientist that he is, he's going to be on the warpath tomorrow. So
it'll
be an exciting show.
Okay, great.
I'll say goodnight to you, and I'm going to say goodnight to the listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Special thanks to Don Newsom, executive producer, and co-founder of BBS Radio, as well as Seth Hendrick and Marcella on the sound. I want to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. Tomorrow's another night, so in the meantime, have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.
I'm crying all my damn mistakes. The past was a complication, just never ending thought. My vow.